Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Tasmadimam swam prakritim. Daivim sarasaratmikam.
Daivim sarasaratmikam.
Durvibhavyam parabhavya.
Durvibhavyam parabhavya.
Swarupena avastate.
Swarupena avastate.
Material energy, and therefore the next word, daivim.
Daivim.
Divine. So what verse in the Bhagavad Gita describes this? Daivam Prakriti. Huh? Huh? Excuse me? What's the verse? It says something about it. Daivi Esha, yes. Daivi Esha Gunamayi. Daivi means the same thing. And Esha, this. Daivim, this material energy, daivyesha gunamayi. Gunamayi means the material energy which is full of gunas. Guna means the qualities. And what are the qualities describe? Goodness, passion, ignorance. So this maya consists of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And it is Krishna's own energy. And therefore, daivam, it is divine. And therefore, because it is empowered by Krishna, daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. What does duratyaya mean? Insurmountable. Insurmountable. We cannot cross beyond it. It's such a heavy word, actually. Insurmountable. There's nothing that one can do by his own power to defeat, subdue, or cross beyond the material energy. So that because this chapter is about Kapila Muni is explaining devotional service and a specific process of devotional service that is Sankhya or Yoga. So he's describe the meditation upon the Lord's divine form through yoga as a process to surmount this insurmountable material energy. And why is it insurmountable? Again? Because it's Krishna's. It's empowered by Krishna. When we're fighting Maya, we're fighting Krishna's own energy. And therefore, indirectly, we're fighting Krishna. And if we don't understand who the controller of this material energy is, we just simply keep banging our heads against this material energy. And this is especially true for everyone, certainly. But for devotees, there's such a tendency, and I also know this firsthand, I'm not just speaking what I've read, to try to become Krishna conscious by one's own power, by my own power. But we're fighting the material energy. And therefore, what does Krishna say in the second half of that verse? Devyesha gunamayi mama maya dirataya. Second half of the verse? Mayevate prapadyante mayam etan tarantite. There is a process of surmounting the insurmountable, but it is dependence on Krishna, surrender to Krishna. The essence of surrender to Krishna is dependence on Krishna. Gotrupte varanam tata. This is intolerable, such an affront to the conditioned soul's mentality. I have to depend on another. I'm not powerful enough to do it by myself. It's so difficult for a conditioned soul, especially with a large Western false ego. to surmount this one little simple problem that we are not powerful enough to do it by ourselves. We have to take shelter of Krishna. There is no other way. Mamevate prapadyante mayam etan tarantite. And by Krishna's mercy, only then can one surmount this. So, tasmad imam swam prakritim daivam. This prakriti, prakriti means energy, daivam, it is divine, and sadasat atmikam, next words, sadasat atmikam, consisting of cause and effect, durvibhavyam, difficult to understand. Consisting of cause and effect, this material energy, it is the cause of everything in the material world, and it is the effect too. Everything, say this cushion, very, very simple. It's cushion, it's an effect, but it has a cause. So in the case of the cushion, what are some of the, there's two types of causes. In Sanskrit, one of the words is upadan karan, which is the ingredient cause. And then another type of cause is, I think it's called nimittik karan, which means the efficient cause or the one who's moving the ingredients. So what's the ingrediential cause of this? What are the ingredients of this cushion? What?
Yeah.
Fabric?
What kind of fabric? Can you tell?
Yeah, it's 80-20, I think. So it's cotton, and what? And inside there's some more cotton, and there's like that. And then what else is there? There's some thread. These are the ingredients. And there's the cause of that, is one of the other causes, the one who's pushing the ingredients around. There's some person who sowed it. And there's some person also who harvested the cotton, and there's so many people who brought the cotton and made it into thread. So the causes and the effect, this cushion, they're all composed of the material energy, this daivam prakritim, this daivam sadasadatmakam. And this is durbhavyam. Does anyone remember what durbhavyam means? Difficult to understand how this is all going on. This creation, everything from the creation of the cushion, it is being pushed, caused, and the effect is the material energy, Maya. And because we are right in that Maya, we ourselves are caused and affected by the Maya. Ultimately, as souls, we are not caused and affected by the Maya. But our days, and weeks and months and what everything, so much of our nature, it is impelled by this sarasadatmikam, this very, very, very difficult to understand material energy. Just like the fish cannot understand the water because that's all it sees is the water. It cannot separate itself from the water to understand the water. So similarly, we are so much involved in this material energy, we cannot separate ourselves from it. So therefore, tasmanimam swam prakritim daivam sarasaratmikam durbhavyam. Very, very difficult to understand this Maya. We are trying to surmount the material energy so we can become servants of Sisi Gonitai, Sisi Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. But it is very, very difficult to surmount. And the next word. Parabhavya.
Parabhavya.
After conquering. So after conquering this material energy, which is very difficult to understand, then the next word. Swarupena,
swarupena,
in the self-realized position,
position.
Avatishtate, he remains. So the idea is that even though this material energy is so difficult to surmount, to attain self-realization, one has to conquer it and become situated beyond it. Now, of course, the Bhagavatam is also teaching us how to do this. But we'll see what Prabhupada says on this. So, sarupena vatishtitate. There is one in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, in the 10th chapter, I believe. Because one of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam is mukti. Naroda mukti asraya. So mukti, or what does mukti mean? Liberation, freedom from, specifically from the bondage of this material energy. Why does one wish to get free from the bondage of material energy? There's not just one answer to this. There's so much suffering. Has anyone ever seen someone dying? Just go through the process of dying. I mean, on one level, we're all going through that process. But, going through the last stages of that process. You've seen that? Who was it? Your father. It was difficult for you? Difficult for him? So difficult. This is what it means to be caught within the material energy. This is just one of the elements of it. The last crushing aspect of the material energy, fighting us, who is fighting the material energy. In the 5th canto of the Bhagavatam, it discusses the hard struggle for existence. And Prahlad Maharaj says, "Please, O Lord Nrisimhadev, make me fearless in the hard struggle for existence." That defines what material life is. When we're young, we have a very romantic idea of how the world will align itself to our plans and our ideas. We have so many plans. Very, very romantic, very, very idealistic. And even when we join the Krishna consciousness movement, we have a dream. It's all going to be, everyone's going to be fully sweet and nice to each other, and everything's going to be so wonderful, and then we'll just like merrily dance our way back to Godhead, just effortlessly and merrily by just chanting and taking prasadam and jai prabhu. But as we find out, material life and spiritual life is not like that. It's a struggle. It's a struggle. Really, it's a struggle against what? What are we struggling against? Is Maya? What are we struggling? What's Maya's deepest hold on us? And what's that based on? On the deepest level. Yes, it's a hankara, it's false ego. This is the first covering over the soul, a false sense of identity as separate from being Krishna's servant. And based on that, the desire to enjoy is there. And it's just simply a struggle. And the material energy simply does not cooperate. It forces us to struggle. And struggle and struggle. When one removes the false ego, and that's ultimately what Kapila Muni is, I can't remember if he's already, I think he will say it very soon, or if he hasn't already said it, how devotional service, it gets at the very heart of our material existence, because different from karma, jnana, and yoga, which are gradual processes, but bhakti gets at the very heart of our material existence, at the false ego. And what we're being asked to do is, at the very heart of our material existence, give it up and surrender to Krishna and admit and say that
Yeah, there was something when I was on the plane coming on this, can't remember the airlines, but they have this, they have these seductive magazines, and every they tinge everything with sexual innuendos. So the magazine says right on the front, "Take me, I'm yours." It's, and that's really what we have to do to Gaudiya, to Prabhupada, to Krishna, and say, "Take me, I'm yours. And you, I'm here. How can I serve you? How can I serve you?" And to actually fully mean that. And the hard part I find is not fully meaning it even every now and then, but consistently. That's the hard part, the consistency, whether you feel it or not, whether you feel like it or not. When one is inspired, one can, you know, then one can sincerely call out. But how about when one, just when after one wakes up in the morning or something like that? Ravindra Swarup said one time, "I wake up most mornings an atheist." I know that feeling. But even then, despite what the mind is saying, to say, "Krishna, I'm yours," despite the fact that at this particular moment, I don't feel like it even. Hare Krishna, please, how can I serve you? And therein is the key. How can I serve you instead of my usual of serving me? How can I serve you? What can I do right now that will be pleasing to you? So when one is situated in the position, what's the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita that Mahaprabhu told Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, when he defines the position, what the natural position of the jiva is? Yes, jivera. Where are you from? Odisha. So what is swarupera, jivera? What is when there's that ending air? What does it mean? Yes, you do, but you know it too naturally. In Bangala, Bhujan. So jivera means of. When the er is at the end of the word, it's jivera means of. Swarup. The swa, his own, same word here, swam, his own rupa, his own form. Each and every one of our own forms, who we actually are, jivera sarup hoy, is Krishnera, again the er at the end, of Krishna, jivera sarup hoy, Krishner nityadas. We are all simply the servants of Krishna. This is who we actually are. And everything else is false ego. All other identities are false ego. So the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, 10th chapter, it describes, when it describes mukti, it defines it as mukti hitva anurupena. Anyone know that? Mukti hitva anurupena. Avastita, the same word is used, sarupena avastita. When we're situated in our natural position, mukti hitva anyatarupena, sarupena, yes, thank you. Sarupena avastita. Mukti, the definition of liberation is when one is situated in one's natural position, again, free from false ego, beyond the modes of material nature. So here we'll read Prabhupada's translation. Thus the yogi can be in the self-realized position after conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya. What an interesting combination of words. Conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya. So it's practically speaking contradictory. How could one conquer something that's insurmountable?
But yet the yogi attains the self-realized position after conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya. So naturally, if one is reading carefully, one will start asking the question, of course, how is it possible? Because that's what it feels like most of the time. How is it possible to conquer this insurmountable spell of Maya, who presents herself as both the cause and effect of this material manifestation? So everything we see is a cause and an effect. So the cushion that we talked about as being an effect is also the cause of me being able to sit on something. So Maya's presenting herself as objects independent of Krishna, as both causes and effects. But actually what Maya is Krishna's energy. But she doesn't present herself as that. She presents herself as a continuing series of cause and effects. And that bewilders us, because we try to manipulate causes in the material world to get the effects that we want. And the effects based on false ego are for our pleasure, self-centered, selfish. So we take that tendency into Krishna consciousness, naturally, because that's all we know in one sense. Well, that's our habit. And we try to manipulate the material energy for our pleasure. And what Krishna so kindly arranges failure for us, and difficulties and obstacles, so we can learn the lesson that this is not possible, to surmount the unconquerable material energy by my own power. So she presents herself as both the cause and effect of the material manifestation, and is therefore very difficult to understand. Very difficult to understand how Maya is working. So, I can't see back. There's the verse there, in English. Okay, so, excuse me? Okay, so please repeat after me. Thus the yogi can be in the self-realized position. After conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya.
After conquering the insurmountable spell of Maya.
And just the use of the word spell is so interesting also. What is a spell? What is a spell? Who puts spells on people? Witches and tantrics and... huh? And wizards. And the spell of Maya, makes us... bewilders one. It bewilders us. One sees this all the time, actually, how we become bewildered by Maya, by the spell of Maya. I mean, this unlimited examples, advertising, that, you know, they paint a, you know, they give you a billboard up there, and they say, only if you will buy this, then the implication is you'll be happy. Or the one that strikes me the most is sometimes you're walking down the street, and I saw it. One sannyasi had this little, you know, it was like a 2-minute video on his computer, and he showed it to me. And it was this person walking down the street with long hair and sort of a shirt off the side of his shoulder, and walking and sort of wiggling a little bit, and then the mind starts to play with that. And then it gets closer, and then that person gets to a street light and turns around, and it's some man with a mustache. And your mind just, wait a second. Because the mind is always making a plan to enjoy the material energy, and it's creating this whole illusion that there's some enjoyment there. But it's only the mind. There's nothing else. It actually has nothing to do with the material, what you're seeing. It's just the mind is imposing conceptual framework on this bit of matter, the conceptual framework of the enjoyer, that I can somehow enjoy this, but actually there is no pleasure there. We see with our minds, we don't see with our eyes, and we impose, due to that false ego, we impose that sense of enjoyership, but this material energy is meant for my pleasure. We impose all these conceptions which Maya feeds to us on the material energy. There's a spell that's actually cast on us because we cannot enjoy this. Very difficult to break through this spell, but certainly we're going to hear how to do it, because there is something so wonderful beyond the spell of material energy. And what is that? What is that wonderful thing beyond the spell of material energy? Liberation, the absence of misery. But is that the goal? The highest goal? No. What is beyond even liberation? Nirodha, mukti, asraya. That asraya is Krishna. If we can just get one little taste of the sweetness of our relationship with Krishna, it's enough to carry us and the whole world, practically speaking, to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Just a taste, a drop. And that's what our Nittai Gaurachandra have come to give us. Because they're very, 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 very merciful. Very merciful. Because they melt the heart. Because our hearts are become so enamored by the material energy, by Maya, that it becomes hard based on our desire to enjoy. Hard and callous and untrusting. Because we try so many times to do something with ourselves in the center, and each time we get slapped. And, you know, through our families, through our friends, through our so many things, our purchases. And then by the time one gets older, one's cynicism and hardness just grows and grows and grows. But it describes in Chaitanya Bhagavat how by that Nittai Gaur, that Mahaprabhu, by that process of sankirtan, of chanting Krishna's names, they cause the bliss of Goloka to descend. And by their mercy, the heart can melt, the hard heart that has been so calloused by dealing with the material world. And the worst part is all the things that we hate when people do to us, we find that we do the same thing to others. So we're caught in cause and effect, caught in every way. But by the mercy of Nittai Gaur, the heart can melt, and we can experience the sweetness of according to who we are and what our advancement is. We can have, to one degree or another, the sweetness of Goloka Vrindavan through chanting Krishna's names, because Krishna's names are Abhinatam Namanamano, no different from Krishna. So that is the essence of the process that Mahaprabhu gave to bring us, carry us to Goloka Vrindavan, chanting Krishna's names. So we'll start Prabhupada's purport. It is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the spell of Maya, which covers the knowledge of the living entity, is insurmountable. However, one who surrenders unto Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can conquer the seemingly insurmountable spell of Maya. Here also it is stated that the Daivi Prakriti, or the external energy of the Supreme Lord, is Durvibhavya. Very difficult to understand and very difficult to conquer. One must, however, conquer this insurmountable spell of Maya, and this is possible by the grace of the Lord when God reveals himself to the surrendered soul. It is also stated here, Swarupena Vatishtita. Swarupa means that one has to know that he is not the supreme soul. Swarup, what does Swarup mean again? One's own form or one's own nature, yes. So one has to understand that he is not the supreme soul, but rather part and parcel of the supreme soul. That is self-realization. To think falsely that one is the supreme soul and that one is all-pervading is not swarup. Does anyone think that they are the supreme soul and is all-pervading and is all-powerful? Practically speaking, who could be so foolish to think that I'm the all-pervading, all-powerful supreme personality or supreme Lord, and somehow or another I've forgotten? It doesn't make any sense. That is not the realization of his actual position. The real position is that one is part and parcel. It is recommended here that one remains in that position of actual self-realization. So, jivera sarupoi krishner nityadas. That position, part and parcel position, means I am a servant of Krishna. And Krishna consciousness means to develop the serving mood, the loving serving mood towards Krishna. Gradually or quickly, we should develop this, a loving and serving mood towards Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, this understanding is defined as Brahman realization. Okay. Does anyone remember anything from that paragraph? Yes, we are not the supreme soul. No one will think that I am the supreme soul, that everything works by my order. But we tend to act like that. Even though we don't think like that, we tend to think that it all revolves around me. And that thinking has to be changed at the core if one wants to go back to Godhead. The core means we have to stop thinking that all things should revolve around me, and we should start thinking that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and I should serve him. How can I please him? How can I serve him? So therefore Prabhupada, in the first translation he gave of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he gave, O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. How can I serve you? I'm so tired of making believe I'm the center of existence. How can I serve you? Even if I'm not tired of it, it's not working. It's not making me happy. How can I serve you? Anyone else remember anything from that paragraph? Yes. Yeah, very interesting. That's exactly what Prabhupada said. One can surmount it only when Krishna, because usually we hear that when he gives his mercy, but here he said hinting at what that mercy is. He reveals his own form. This is so wonderful. What does Krishna's form look like? What's a characteristic of Krishna's form? Yeah. No, you. Yeah. 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 Golden. What is the color of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's complexion compared to? Molten gold. Has anyone ever seen molten gold? I have. I went to the Perth Mint just to see it. It's quite interesting. It's almost out of this world. It gives off an energy. It's very, very golden color, certainly, but it has some red in it. You'd probably be able to describe what it's like better than me, but it's effulgent. It's quite shocking. It's effulgent. It gives off an energy, an effulgence. Does New Zealand have a mint in Christchurch? We can all go take a school tour to the no. Huh? Do they melt down gold for your pleasure there? But it's really something. It's really effulgent. Effulgent. So, like in Krishna's dhoti is that color too. Like lightning. It's also compared to lightning. And what else about Krishna's form? Yes, he's standing in a very attractive threefold bending feature. And what else? And what's he doing when he's doing that? He's playing his flute, which captures the mind of everyone. And what else about Krishna's form?
Lotus navel.
Lotus navel. What is a lotus navel? Deep, very attractive. Everything is every aspect of Krishna's form is perfectly formed and all attractive. And his complexion is like a monsoon cloud. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, previously, after he's actually seen Krishna's form, he describes the Madhurya Kadambini, after I have seen your form, I understand that previously I've compared it to material things such as a monsoon cloud, but it is not. It is something else. It is so fully spiritually effulgent and attractive. And his eyes are like lotus petals. What's the shape of a lotus petal? Like this. And they almost come to his eyes are so big. They almost come to his ears. So attractive, so beautiful. And his eyebrows are always moving, captivating. And he wears earrings that are shaped like sharks. We translate it as shark, but it's makar. Sometimes translated as dolphins. And the effulgence from his cheeks bounces off the earrings, and his hair is, what's his hair? Like, very curly, blue black and very curly, and sometimes it's tied back. Very, 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 very beautiful. And when he reveals that form, as Prabhupada said, as you remember, that then Maya pays her obeisances and leaves. What can I do? Because Maya cannot stand before Krishna, just like the shadow cannot be present in the light. So we have to fill our consciousness, even with the forms, these forms of the Lord. And that's what Mahaprabhu was teaching us. He came as Krishna himself, adopting the mood of Srimati Radharani in the complexion, to teach us how to be devotees. The mood. And look where his consciousness is. We don't know, but it's not where it is exactly by looking, but we can know it's not here in Christchurch or in New Zealand or in the southern hemisphere or anywhere of the material world. And he's so blissful. I'll read the last two paragraphs. The second paragraph is short, and then I'm going to ask what anything strikes you. You remember anything? So Prabhupada has talked about Brahman realization being is really understanding our relationship with Krishna. So after Brahman realization, one can engage in the activities of Brahman. As long as one is not self-realized, he
He engages in activities based on false identification with the body. When one is situated in his real self, then the activities of Brahman realization begin. The Mayavadi philosophers say that after Brahman realization, all activities stop, but that is not actually so. If the soul is so active in its abnormal condition, existing under the covering of matter, how can one deny its activities when free? An example may be cited here. If a man is in a disease, a man in a disease condition is very active, how can one imagine that when he is freed from the disease, he will be inactive? Naturally, the conclusion is that when one is free from all his disease, his activities are pure. It may be said that the activities of Brahman realization are different from those of conditional life, but that does not stop activity. This is indicated in Bhagavad Gita 18:54. After one realizes himself to be Brahman, devotional service begins. Mad bhaktim labhate param. After Brahman realization, one can engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, devotional service of the Lord is activity in Brahman realization. For those who engage in devotional service, there is no spell of Maya. Now, what do you think when you hear that, a sentence like that, and their situation is all perfect? Yes. So we are aspiring to engage in devotional service. The duty of the living entity as part and parcel of the whole is to render devotional service to the whole. That is the ultimate perfection of life. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 28th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Lord Kapiladeva's Instructions on the Execution of Devotional Service. Anyone remember anything from that, those paragraphs? Do you remember anything? Yes, what? Yeah, thank you. Anyone else remember anything?
And then
there are activities. That whole paragraph was about the activities on the pure Brahman platform beyond the modes of material nature. What else? What was the substance of that paragraph? Yeah. What was Prabhupada saying in that paragraph? Basically.
Well, we're in conditions that are clear and based on the false ego. We don't know.
But what was he? What was it? Was that he was presenting an argument against something?
You're at
spiritual. Huh? Yes. Yeah. Yes. So he's speaking about the activities of the healthy soul, the pure soul, and they are devotional activities. We use the term devotional service, bhakti, or seva, means activity, the natural consciousness of the living entity, Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti rasita bhavato mati. Activities offered to Krishna with great love and devotion, and that's the natural consciousness of each and every one of us. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. Any questions or comments? We'll go till 5:30. Any questions or comments?
How do we get straight into
But we accept that we're Krishna's servants. Servant of Prabhupada, servant of the deity, servant of the Vaishnava, servant of Guru. We accept, that's what initiation means. That we accept, now I am Krishna Das. I am no longer thinking I'm Krishna. The center, I'm Das. We put the tilak on. Means that the body is not meant for my pleasure, it's a temple, which is meant for Krishna's pleasure, for worshipping Krishna. So it starts by, devotional service really begins by the surrender of the soul to Krishna. I'm yours, take me, I'm yours. I'm yours. How can I please you? So that thought, that consciousness, how can I please you, Krishna, putting Krishna in the center, instead of me in the center, is what we mean by that. So how to do that consistently, so and steadily, and then with increasing devotion, that's, you know, the challenge of life. To keep the consciousness pure, to make it, and to purify it still further, and also to develop affection and love, appreciation, affection, love for Krishna. To keep away from certain things that cover the consciousness still further. Chaito Dharpana Marjanam, to cleanse the heart, and to Kaya Karaiva Chandrika, to allow the white lotus of our good fortune to blossom, our spiritual life to blossom. All these effects come by chanting Krishna's names. So to chant with sincerity, with affection, to serve, to do it with consciousness, not just because it's such a, anything that we do every day, we tend to do, tend after a while to do it mechanically. And the art is to do it with consciousness and dependence on Krishna. And, yeah. So when one begins in Krishna consciousness, everything is new, everything is fresh, so that there's more, we apply more consciousness. But then after one does it for a few months or a few years, then, you know, we think, oh, I've done this, what's next? But the next, what's next is the consciousness, to apply our consciousness with devotion. And we can do that immediately. Instead of me sweeping the floor, I'll make it a simple example of cooking, for me, how can I do this? Be thinking, how can I do this for the pleasure of Krishna? How can I act in such a way that my spiritual master, Prabhupada, Gaurinathai, the Vaishnavas will be pleased? This is a, it's alive. In whatever situation we're in our life, we think like that. How can I act right now so that Krishna will be pleased? And to offer what we're doing right now to, with devotion. That's Krishna consciousness. Any other questions or comments? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kapila Muni ki jai, Nithai Gaura Chandra ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai. No, not allowed. Because I decided that. Thank you though, but... Nah.